This is my quest to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Playing in John Gibbons with the song My Way. What button? The Impossible Dream, whatever it is. What button does John push here? There you go. You don't have to push a button. What did I say? My Way, The Impossible Dream. There you go.
You guys are good around.
Huh? It's amazing.
I don't have to do anything myself.
You have to sit up closer to the microphone.
There I can't lean back. That's kind of who I am.
Well, no. I mean, you can't. Well, if you were on McCowan's show, you could, because they've got the expensive headphones where you can, you know, like the little thing around the earpiece.
What's Bob doing now? Is he still in bed, probably?
Bob's probably in the Bahamas. He goes down. He flies. He's got a private plane that flies him down every weekend to the Bahamas and brings him back. I don't know what he's doing.
When are you going to be doing that? About a couple years from now?
Me?
Yeah.
I'll be. Listen, the only thing I'd be doing, I'd be servicing the private plane. That's about it. I'd be servicing.
I'd be servicing the
private plane. How you doing?
Jeff, I'm doing good. You know, I cut on the banquet circuit right now. First time ever. We just got back from, we were out west in the prairies.
In Moose Jaw.
Moose Jaw. Gosh, was it cold, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Great people. Loved it. But it was too damn cold.
It is cold. Yeah. Winnipeg is colder than Moose Jaw, by the way. If you ever.
Well, I know that whole area is cold.
Yeah, it is cold. It
well, but great. Really enjoyed it. I really did.
And you were out there with Jamie Campbell, who appears to be your agent now.
Oh, yeah. Jamie's all over the place. They love him.
He is all over the place. Yeah. Well, he's big out west. He always has been.
I think he started out there, didn't he?
Yeah, so you were in Moose Jaw.
Now I'm here, and I got some little thing tomorrow night, and then Conn Smythe dinner on Wednesday.
Of course, because your good friend Jerry Howarth
Jerry,
is being honored.
Oh, yeah, Jerry. Jerry. And then I hop on a plane Thursday morning for Halifax.
Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Then there's something that night, and then I hop on a plane back home. So that's enough. I'm tired already.
Going to Halifax. Jesus, Jamie's taking you to all the hot spots.
Yeah, I guess. You know, I'm seeing this whole country again.
Halifax is, that's quite the place.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. Navy Town, isn't it? Kind of,
oh, yeah.
Sea Town?
Yeah, Navy Town and College Town, which is just about the worst combination you could possibly... if you could put two groups of people together, who would you want to put together? Sailors and college students.
Oh, yeah, but I'm an old man, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll be in that bed.
Halifax is a way of making you young. You look good. What have you been up to?
You know,
I've been going to Saskatchewan and...
Yeah, you know, not a whole lot. We sold our house in San Antonio. We did that over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to figure out where we want to live. We got a little place out in the mountains in New Mexico.
Nice.
New Mexico, not Mexico. And then my mom's got a little place
build
down in the
wall,
Gulf of Mexico.
John. Build that wall.
I'm not building. I don't need a job. They got to pay me here next year.
Yeah, so. That's true. That's right. Yeah, you don't need a job. And so whereabouts in New Mexico?
It's a little town called Ruidoso, a little ski town.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the southernmost ski mountain in the U.S., And then my mom's got a place down in the Gulf of Mexico, so we kind of bounce back and forth, so I get the mountains and the ocean. And
that's not bad.
No.
You don't ski, though, do you?
Yeah, I did it one time, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of hit or miss with the snow up there, though. It's so far south, you know, global warming, you know, it's snowfall hadn't been real good.
Yeah, well, I know your global warming is one of your biggest concerns.
Well, there was no global warming out in the prairies, I guarantee
but
you that.
See, but that's, here we go. The cold weather is also a product of, everybody thinks global warming just means that the globe is warming. There's a kind of a reaction to that, which is it gets colder as well.
Oh, is there? Okay. Yeah. You went to school.
No, I did not. I went to the University of Manitoba. Please don't ever confuse that with going to school. Actually, before we get a little baseball talk in, you took a team to postseason, took the Jays to postseason back-to-back years. What goes through your mind when you see a coach and a quarterback win six Super Bowls the way Belichick and Brady have done? Like, just as someone who's had to coach professional athletes and knows what it's like to sort of herd cats every now and then, do you just marvel at the fact that a guy can not just win that many championships, but get to those many championship games?
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I mean, it's hard to comprehend. It really, really is. And you know, I think there's more parity in all sports now, you know, in the NFL, we're talking about. And yeah, it's, you know, I can't grasp it. You know, I often looked at, you know, for my sport, I mean, Cito won two championships here. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do. You know, we got close, but we didn't. He's got two under his belt there, but you know, it just shows you though that there's certain guys I think are difference makers, and I think Belichick obviously is one of those guys. You know, your Chuck Knowles, you know, mm-hmm. Tom Landry's. I mean, that was a different era, but you know, I think the common denominator obviously is. In football, you got that great quarterback, and they piece together the right guys, and they do something different. They do something better than other teams. And but you know, Belichick, I mean, there's some confidence there.
Yeah,
you know,
just a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So you know what? I think that gives him an edge too.
How important is that for a manager or a coach? You know, like one of the things you were always very good at is not showing panic. And how important is it for a coach or a manager, John, to even if his guts are churning inside, to at least in that public face just sort of show the same basic demeanor, you know, and just it's whether or not you got a handle on something, it's good to let people think that you think you have
never let him see you sweat. Right?
Never let him see you sweat. Exactly. But there really is something to that.
I think so. I really think so. Some people may argue against that, I just think, you know, especially, you know, the sport of baseball can be a slow moving. You got to be under control, relaxed to play the game really well. So, and teams have, I think, they take on the personality of the manager, mm-hmm. you know, good or bad, whatever that. Maybe, but, you know, so in baseball, when everything, you try to slow everything down, you know, if you're feeling that extra pressure, you're taking the heat from the manager, he's breathing down your neck or you're grinding a little bit too hard, it gets that much tougher to play, you know. I think if your manager's relaxed or shows confidence or, you know, whatever he might do, I think that can do wonders for players sometimes. No, I mean, there's times where some emotion needs to be injected, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think especially in the sport of baseball, I think you need to try to be steady. Like I said, some people may argue against that. They, you know, and there's different personalities, whether it's coaching, managing, players, and you know, the tendency too. A lot of times, if you're going to replace somebody, you go with the opposite personality, back and forth.
Right. Have you had any calls?
No. You know what I've done? I talked to a few teams, some old buddies of mine out there that are running teams, and I'm gonna take the year off. You know, I'd be honest with you, I could use that. I think it'd be a chance to re-energize. And I'd love to stay in it. I'd love to manage again. If that happens, great. If not, I want to do something. Mm. And I still think I have something to offer. But you know, that'll probably happen next year where I'll get more involved and do some things. But, you know, I'm actually looking forward to a little break. I really am. You know, this will be the first time, 38, 39 years, I think it is, that I won't be going to spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm actually kind of looking forward to, bad as that may sound. Now, 2 weeks from now, I may think otherwise, but...
Does it surprise you feel that way?
No. You know what? Believe it or not, I mean, it's a very demanding profession, but, you know, I mean, we get treated like kings.
Mm-hmm.
It wears you out, but it's, you know, it's not the pressures that other people face. So, but it takes its toll on you. I think the schedule that the time away from family, you're here, there, everywhere, that catches up to you sooner or later. And, you know, I've known some, you know, buddies of mine that have coached and managed in this game for a long time. They've gone through the same thing, you know, it's not burnout, but it's, you know what, you kind of hit that wall a little bit. And, you know, in the circumstances that the way they end sometimes mm-hmm. contributes to that a little bit, you know, when things aren't going the way you want, you know, say maybe it's time to take a step back.
What now that you've had a couple of months away from this the situation here, how do you look back on your time as manager of the Blue Jays? Any differently than, you know, that October 1st or September 29th, whenever it was?
Yeah, you know what, Jeff? I look back with great memories. You know, I mean, a lot of ups and downs. I mean, I was here through some, you know, real tough times. You know, and I was here when really the resurgence. I mean, mm-hmm. it took a long time, but, you know, we finally got there. didn't last, you know, like we all wanted. In that sense, it's disappointing. But you know what? I'm normally a very positive guy, and I'll take some great memories from this place. But it was time. You know, it was time for me to move on. It was time for them to, you know, find their own guy. I think we came up short those 2 years, no doubt about it. And so I'll regret that a little bit. But the fact that I was part of a team that finally got back to it, it's pretty special to me.
Our text line is 590-590 if you want to talk to John Gibbons. Send us a text. I'll edit them.
Are you expecting any bad ones?
No, hell no. No, hell no, not at all. But it's just give us your name and where you're from as well, if you could. And because I'm sure some of you will have questions.
You think Wilner will be calling in?
10-11? No chance.
Okay.
No chance. No chance. Wilner won't be up yet. Having said that, just watch. Wilner's probably going to call in right now. Since you've left the Blue Jays, how many people, fans, people in the city have reached out to you? Like, have you been surprised at maybe people you didn't realize had a soft spot for you or reached out to you? Have you been surprised by that reaction?
Yeah, Jeff. You know what? I can't. I don't think I've experienced any negative reaction, to be honest with you. But I've said to you and some others before, you know, you've never heard a bad eulogy at a funeral, though, you know, sometimes. And, it's been a lot more positive than I expected, to be honest with you. One thing I've enjoyed about my time here, you know, in Canada, you know, aside from the baseball, is the way that people treated me, you know, and the quality of people, and really they're a lot like, the people down south, if you want to know the truth. And I know that might be an insult to some people, but it's not. There's a lot of similarities, and I became good friends with a lot of folks up here. So, I think the reaction I think was a lot better than I expected. There's no doubt.
Would you have done anything differently, other than maybe win a series against Kansas City? I still believe if Brett Cecil's healthy, you guys win that.
I agree with you.
I will go to my grave thinking.
I've got to agree with you, you know. But that's the way it works. I wouldn't have done anything different. You know, I think you mature in these jobs over time, and maybe from a strategy standpoint, you might change some things. But as far as my overall time here, the way I dealt with the people, dealt with the media, front offices, or carried myself. Wouldn't change a thing. You think I should have? You think that? Well,
there was a time that you didn't pinch hit for.
For who?
No, you know what is? You know what has always amazed me about baseball? When you think of the number of decisions, this is an original thought. I don't know who mentioned this to me one time, but when you think of the number of decisions a manager makes over the course of a day, like just decisions. I got to do this, I got to do that, got to do this with this guy, got to do this with this guy. And I know you have coaches and all that to help you, and more you've got analytics. Do people realize, John, and you're right. I mean, look, you know, you're not out there shoveling coal or, you know, working on the roads and it's minus 40. But do people realize just how much managers have to decide things during the course of a game? You're right. It's, you know, the game is going to develop the way it's going to develop, but the number of decisions you have to make.
Yeah. I mean, they would probably be surprised. And you know, your mind's always churning. You're looking, you know, you go into a game. Okay. And you kind of look at how you might set some things up on that night, if this happens or that happens, but things always change in baseball. And you know, from the first inning on, you're looking down the road a little bit to the later innings, who you have available that may not have started the game, and mm-hmm. Okay, you got to, hey, let's make sure we got this guy ready, or let's try to pick a spot maybe to use him, or maybe, you know, you're not going to use him at all that night, you know, for whatever reason, and people don't always understand that. But, yeah, there's a lot of things, your mind's always churning, and then some things never present themselves, so you don't have to, you know, make as many decisions on certain nights. But really, that's kind of, you know, baseball is really a simple game, but from the manager's seat, I mean, you there is some things you dictate that you know can affect an outcome of a game, and you try to get those right. And but it always comes down, if you got the better player, you can either do it right or wrong, and good player usually
makes you right.
Makes you right.
Mason and Perry Sound hit us up in the text line 590-590, wondering what your thoughts were on Roy Halladay getting elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm thrilled. Naturally, you know, had a chance, you know, to manage Roy, and he coached when I was coaching. You know, he was on the team, and really when he was just coming into his own, and you know, I think that's a thrill for anybody that's been associated with Roy, whether they knew him personally or not. You know, he had a tremendous career. It was tragic what happened, but he earned it. You know, and he's a model for Toronto Blue Jays. You know, he was Roy was high performance before there was high performance. You know, the things he did and his approach to everything. So yeah, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for his family that they'll get a chance to celebrate that.
How many in-depth discussions did you have with Roy? Not just necessarily about baseball, but I mean about life, family, whatever.
You know, a few, but not a lot. You know, for the amount of time we're together. Roy keep to himself. You know, I keep to myself. I kept back then, especially. I kept to myself more than I would have done the last few years.
You were different. Were you a different guy with the players in your second go around than you were the first?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Naturally, you know, I had experience under my belt. I knew. Had a better idea what to say or what I wanted to say or how to say it, those kind of things. But, yeah, Roy is one of those guys you'd see him every day, and he'd give you that big old smile.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he wasn't going to talk your ear off either now. So, but, yeah, we sat down a few times, and it wasn't just about baseball. It was about how things are going on in life and, you know, and things like that. And, he's a wonderful guy, it's sad that he's not here to enjoy this, but it's a great honor for him and his family.
Do you think that, given the number of innings he pitched, and I mean, would Roy Halladay be allowed to develop the way baseball is now, the way the Jays allowed him to develop? You know, or actually send him back all the way down to single A and essentially rebuilt his delivery and all this. I mean, we know how far. What step back he had to take before Mel Queen got him figured out, got him straightened around, and then he came back hitting the ground running. Could you see that happening now, the way the game is now, where a guy could essentially rebuild himself, come back, and be one of the best pitchers of his generation?
Do you know, Jeff, I mean, I don't care, you know, that's hard to do any time, mm-hmm. The game's so different now. I think teams are probably a little reluctant or leery. They're going to even to reinvent guys, you know, especially if you're their top dog, and you know Roy was a big draft pick and what have you. And but it's extreme to any time to send somebody all the way down to A-ball. But you know with Mel doing that, and they had his great baseball mind, and say, well, hey, if we do this, this might set his career off. I mean, he's not going to be able to do it the way he's doing it, and. He took off. That just shows you how good, you know, the coaching was back then that they had here. But, I don't see teams sending guys all the way back down to A-ball. They might write you off before they try that nowadays, or at least, you know, trade you.
Yeah.
You know?
Bill in Hamilton is a question. I like this one. As a bullpen catcher, who was the pitcher you hated warming up the most? Which is a good baseball question. Was there a guy you just because you were with the Mets when they had some great pitchers?
Well, back then, Doug Sisk, you remember that name?
Yes,
Doug. He just had a heavy, hard sinking fastball, and he bounced it a lot. And he was he was a good reliever for the Mets back there, but he was always that top step guy. You know, he'd be 3-2 on everybody, but he'd find a way out of. He would just eat your hand alive, you know. A guy named Tim Leary. Leary was a big Mets prospect, and I think he finally figured out when he went out there to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. But, he was one of the hardest throwers in that day. Some guys have that, we always talk about have that heavy ball, and some guys that it's a light ball, and that light one whether it's the spin, the rotation, what the ball's doing is what causes that, but it's much easier. You know, like Dwight Gooden was, you know, as hard as he threw, was actually easy to catch. Mm-hmm. Number one, he knew where it was going.
Yeah.
But it just didn't have that, it just didn't beat you up like some of those other guys. And
I've always told people that one of the things, the spring training memories I have more than any other was one of the first years covering the beat, getting to watch Doc Gooden throw a session in spring training from behind in Port St. Lucie from behind the cage. It was spectacular.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
That's the only word. It's the only word to describe it.
And he was probably 19, 20 year old. Yeah.
It was just, it was remarkable.
You know, but I remember when I my first job here, when I was the bullpen catcher down there, I can't remember exactly all the guys around that team, but you know, Plesac was on that team, you know, and Zach still had a lot left. And you know, I mean, there's the guys generally the toughest to catch. Usually, you know, they, mm-hmm. well, naturally they got the best stuff normally, right? And Plesac still had a lot left at the time, and he'd throw that, you know, he had that great slider. So although it wasn't in the game, he was still getting it ready down there in the bullpen, and that could eat you up, handcuff you a little bit, and you know, his ball would cut. So yeah, I kind of liked the fact that I was warming Plesac up because it meant we were probably,
yeah, you're gonna
a pretty good game,
yeah,
you know. But yeah, he's the guy that stands out to me because I don't remember a lot of the mm-hmm. old guys from early 2000s, to be honest with you, down there.
Blaming all on my roots, I showed up in boots and ruined your blind tie.
I'm taking credit for this song, by the way, John.
Slow place down there. Is that what this means?
The last Derek Brandeo, our technical director.
The last one you thought you'd see.
Got John Gibbons in studio for another half hour. Leafs morning skate with Mike Zigomanis and Sean Mathias afterwards. You know what we should do? I'd love to get Gibby and Zigomanis in the same studio. He's one of our hockey guys. You know, he climbs mountains. He goes to Guatemala and climbs the mountains.
Is that right?
He surfs, too.
He's an ex-hockey player?
Yeah. What's up with that? He's surfing, climbing mountains with armed guards.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So we're a lot alike?
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that what you mean?
You live in the mountains. He climbs the mountains. I'm going to, and again, 590-590 is the text line. Doug in Brampton. Okay, I got to ask you this question. You're not managing the Jays anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, great call.
I just want to make sure. This is a question Jays fans are dying to know, and I'm dying to know. Doug in Brampton, seriously. What were your thoughts when Showalter didn't use Britton?
Well,
okay, now you're, you know, I just.
No, hey, obviously I was involved in that game. And, you know,
yeah, a little bit.
Kept looking down that bullpen. We saw him up.
Yeah.
And he's coming in. Damn, boys, we better score before he comes in, you know. And then, you know, he didn't come in and what have you. And then.
You're smiling.
No, but then Ubaldo came in, you know, one thing about, and I can see what, you know, Buck was thinking. Ubaldo owned us.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I mean, it was a mismatch. I mean, he had trouble with every other team out there. But when he pitched against us, I don't care. I mean, our best hitters, I mean, we did absolutely nothing. So it wasn't like necessarily it was a great feeling for me when he was in there because, you know, I've been watching him for the last couple of years. But at that time, Britton, you know, was the top in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't do anything against him either, you know. So to be honest, I feel for Buck because
honestly,
yeah. Well, no, I mean, we came out on the good end of that. But you know
That's
what?
True.
I don't think I took heat like that magnitude of that. But you know, I mean, there's some lonely times, and you know, he was trying to. Set his game up or whatever mm-hmm. he's saying. I don't know what was going through his mind and how he looked at things. And but it's a lonely feeling, you know. But glad it happened.
You enjoyed beating Buck, didn't you?
Yeah,
personally.
Oh, yeah.
You enjoyed.
Oh yeah,
because there was a thing between the Orioles and the Jays.
Yeah, there was. You know, there was some tension, and you know, of course, you had the Batista O'Day and Batista and, mm-hmm. well, I guess Batista and a few guys. Yeah, so there was a little something there, you know, and you know, the teams would jaw at each other a little bit here and there. You know, you had the Machado-Donaldson thing, you know, starting when he was in Oakland. And there was a little something extra there. You know, we always play some tough ball games against him. Teams are almost identical. You know, they're both built slugging mm-hmm. teams and what have you in good hitting ballparks. So a lot of similarities and, a lot of similarities between the managers, I guess you'd say.
Jesus.
We're both very smart, aren't we?
Well,
he might be better looking than me, but
He did invent the game. I mean, you're on the honesty and humility scale, you're just a little, just a shade. You're about that much higher than Buck. Let's be honest. It's hard. Look, you invent the game, and then somebody comes along and is better at it than you are. I mean, you put yourself in Buck's.
Hey, I know one thing, man. It's a tough ass game. You know, like you and I were talking about something different earlier,
it is.
Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Where's the question? Darren has a question for you. The best Jay that you managed in your two tenures, best dude in the clubhouse, like just the best, the guy you came in, you loved seeing, attitude, the way he played the game. Was there any guy in particular that really stood out?
JB, there's a lot of them, you know, really, which is, going around probably my first stint. I was a big BJ Ryan guy, Scott Rowland. Scotty's one of my favorite, and I wasn't here for him long. Yeah. Got fired 2 months in.
I'm in the minority here. I love BJ Ryan.
I do too.
We had one night we sat on the veranda at the Vinoy till like 3 a.m. smoking cigars and
I love the guy.
Drinking bourbon. I just thought he was great. And man, people didn't,
Yeah, you know.
It's not his fault he got the money in the contract.
No. And, he wore his emotion on his sleeve, and he'd pretty much tell you what he thought. Mm-hmm. And naturally, Roy, Halliday. God, there were so many good ones. My second go-around, Burley's at the top of the list, mm-hmm.
You keep in touch with him?
Yeah, I haven't spoken with him lately. Usually it's text,
right.
Especially during the season, mm-hmm. When we were scuffling, he'd fire off a text. He's out there either hunting or fishing he's in his RV or mm-hmm. taking his kid's water skin and he's just rubbing it in, saying, maybe they'll fire you and then you can work next year and they still got to pay you, mm-hmm. And sure enough. Thanks, Mark. And then, Donaldson, Josh and Batista, very emotional guys, but I enjoyed seeing them, and I love what they did on the field. Smokey's one of the last remaining guys, veteran mm-hmm. guys, him and Pilar, actually. And even Morales, Kendrick Morales, he didn't mm-hmm. speak much English, but he's one of my all-time favorite, and I was just with him, for a short period of time. So, one thing I can say about my stint here, a lot of great guys to manage and just a lot of great guys to hang around with that I'll never forget them.
How do you think Josh will do in Atlanta?
I think he'll do great. You got to get on the field. Mm-hmm. He gets on the field, I think he'll have a big year. And I think he can put them over the top. They got a good young team, it looks like, with some great talent. Yeah, and I know one thing, he'll bring them that edge. And I don't know how their clubhouse is or how the way their mm-hmm. team functions anyway, but he'll give them that edge. I'm sure he'll ruffle a few feathers when he gets there. But he has a lot to prove, I know he'll be motivated. But you got to keep him on the field.
Was he a pain in the ass to manage? Some of us thought he was a bit of a pain in the ass.
No, I wouldn't say a pain in the ass. It could be tough though, because he was volatile and he was emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what made him good. That's what drove him. And bottom line is production. That's what he did. But I've said many a time over the last few years here that, when we brought Josh and Russell Martin in, it gave us a different, it gave the team a different mentality, which we needed around here over the years.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us a toughness, a little bit of tougher edge. And then, even though those two were here, it wasn't until end of July where things really came mm-hmm. together that 1 year. So, but yeah, I think the guys that like those young racehorses, they can be tough, but you got to have those guys to win.
Yeah, it is absolutely, and it is true that when Martin and when Russell and Josh came here, the tone of the clubhouse changed dramatically.
No doubt,
it was. Sometimes it's good to have a little edge, a little discomfort introduced into a comfortable environment. And
you know what, Jeff? You know, that's really in the sport of baseball, you know, where it's, I mean, you got all the analytics now, and so it's not all X's and O's like some of the other sports. But and your number one job, I think, is holding the team together and dealing with the you know, the guys on the team that, you know, are difficult to deal with sometimes, you know. And I've told many, and, you know, I work for three GMs here, and I told them all, I said, you know, you put the team together. I got no problem who you sign. I said, but let me handle them, deal with them. You don't need the headaches.
Was there ever a guy you told the general manager, I don't need a name, but ever a guy you said, no chance, that guy's not coming here?
Oh yeah. I won't give you any names, but there was a couple that once they were here, get rid of them.
Yeah, of course.
Or I told you so.
Second
obviously
guessing.
They didn't listen the first time. See?
How much input do you think managers in general have in the composition of the team? You know, because one of the things you start hearing now is more and more, not just with the Jays, but other teams, decisions are being made in groups. You know, there are analytics involved.
Very little nowadays.
Yeah.
I would think, you know, you know, teams are really being run by, you know, front offices in the analytics departments. They have a lot of influence, and I don't think you get a managing job in anywhere in the game now if you're not totally on board with this is the way we want to do things. You gotta buy into our input. I don't think you get a job unless you do that.
So how does I mean, managers are different people, obviously different people, different personalities. How do you go about? How do you go about carving out your little corner, you know, your corner, to make sure that you do have some say in things?
Well, you know,
how you deal with people, like how you deal with the front office, basically, or?
Well, I mean, that's big. A lot of, you know, guys that have had success and won championships and, you know, Bill Belichick. I mean, there's very few of those guys, if any, but, a guy like Francona, you know, Terry's had a lot of success in the game. I guarantee you, you know, what he says carries a little more weight than what other people says, you know. And you go back to Joe Torre. You know, Joe, I'm sure they listened to Joe.
Yeah,
I would
I'm
expect
sure they did,
you know. So, I mean, that's a big part of it, too. You know, if you got the hardware, if you got the reputation, and you know, I'm sure they'll listen to you a little bit more. If they don't, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the job is, you know, front office put together the team and you run it. But I think teams nowadays, or managers nowadays, have very little input. But that's okay. I mean, that's not their job necessarily, because you always want to be able to say, "When I told you so." See, hey, you can blame me.
Did you sign that guy? But you had a fair when JP was GM here, and I'm not going to play JP off against Ross or anything, but because that was a different time. But you had a fair amount of say in who. When JP made personnel decisions.
Oh, well, he'd bounce everything off of me. But, you know, so much of the decisions are made, you know, on the, you know, your salary structure.
Right.
As manager and coach, you know, you want the best at this, best everything you can get. But, you know, you can't always get those guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be able to trade for them. You may not, you know, ownership may not say, hey, you know, we're not paying that guy this amount of money. And so it's a pipe dream anyway. So. But, yeah, JP's a great baseball man. But he always ran things by me just to see what I thought. And then if he could do it or if he was in agreement, then he tried to do it. He couldn't always get it done, you know.
We are 10 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting in Dunedin. There's still almost 100 free agents out there, I think. Obviously, Machado's out there, Harper's out there. Is this bad for the game that at this point in time you've got – you know, John, I mean, there were people 5 years ago, everybody was waiting for the year that Harper and Machado became free agents. This was, Pat Gillick said you'd, any team that wasn't planning for that would be guilty of malpractice. Well, here it is, and they're not signed, and part of that may be the agents involved. But also, there's just, I mean, it seems as if there are three or four teams that are interested in these guys. Is it good for the game that so many players are still out there right now?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's good for the game. And yeah, I mean, it's shocking that neither of those two have signed. I do understand. I get what's going on. You know, the length of contracts and the age of guys getting them. you know, for the longest time, I mean, you'd see it all the time. You hear the complaining how, you know, the end of this guy's contract, you know, he's older, he's not productive. So that's changed. But I think your top players is a little surprising. And, you know, like you said, and there's a couple of the teams, you know, like Harper and Machado, like the Padres, mm-hmm. White Sox. I mean, those weren't
Padres,
the teams.
White Sox and Phillies are driving the free agent market.
Those two, at least a couple of those, you wouldn't expect yet.
Yeah.
You know, they're good, strong franchises, and I'm sure obviously they have the money, but you wouldn't think they're in that position yet necessarily. I don't think it's good for the game. You know, hell, like you said, spring training is less than 2 weeks away, and these guys don't have jobs. You know, so a lot like spring training last year was a lot of those guys that they had
the camp
down there, you know, but that's the way the game's going, you know, and I'm sure there'll be a battle. I don't know when the next labor agreement is, but
yeah. Do you worry about the game because of all the stuff going on, you know, talk about, I mean, even the way the game's being played, you know, outlawing shifts and pitch clocks and things like that. Like, baseball has made changes, but it hasn't been like the NFL where, you know, the definition of pass interference changes almost seems on a weekly basis. Are you a little concerned about where baseball's going in that regard, that maybe we're losing what it is about the game that makes it
right.
special?
Yeah, I'm not worried about the game as far as, you know, people still love the game. They always will. And, you know, over the years, everybody's tried to destroy it one way or the other, but you can't, it'll live on forever. You know, with the new thinking or this or that, baseball is always going to come back to its roots, you know, and it's like the U.S. government or any government, right? You can try to screw it up all you want, but you know it's probably gonna settle in.
I'm beginning to dive. I don't know about that. We need to have that discussion another couple of years, I think.
So, but you know what? I haven't seen any money numbers, you know, lately, but I'm sure it was a lucrative year for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it was the best ever.
Was it the best ever?
It was the best
ever. So if that keeps going that way, but that, I'm sure that's a player's argument right there. Well,
mm-hmm. Who'd you rather have, Harper and Machado? If I was your owner and I said, John, I can get you one of those two guys.
Well, naturally you'd like to have one of them. I would probably go with Machado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw him all the time. He's
right.
In the American League. You know, I didn't see much of Harper. You know, I know what he's capable of. You know, I just like the, you know, the offense and the defensibility of Machado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Machado, I mean, you know, Harper, you know, is a good defender. I get that. You know, Machado's an above average defender. I would probably say Machado.
You didn't have a problem with that, what he said in the World Series about, you know, he claimed he was misquoted, but where he said, you know, I don't bust my butt down to first base all the time. Which
I didn't like that, but
it's true.
But hey, I love honesty, man. There are probably a few other guys out there that maybe it'd be kind of nice if they came out and admitted that themselves. Yeah.
But I think too,
that's a game, you know. I don't like it, but you know, he also brings a lot to his team.
What's the one thing a John Gibbons player could not do? What was the one thing? Because like you didn't seem to have a lot of hard and fast rules. You had a lot of expectations, especially with mature players, but what is the one thing you absolutely could not handle on the part of a player?
Jeff, good question. Probably don't cross me, you know, mm-hmm. You know, one thing I always did, I think it was important. I mean, it's the way I was raised, you know, I treat these guys like men,
mm-hmm.
I give them the benefit of the doubt, you know, but you know, let's do things right and don't. And I'm gonna take care of you. But don't stick it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean that happened a few times. Yeah, that's something that got me. You know, because hey, I'll stick my neck out for you, but you know that goes both ways. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what's important about managing. I mean, you can be the best guy in the world, and you can, you know, you still got to keep that fine line. You know, I mean, you can't be too buddy buddy with these guys all the time because it bites you. Because sooner or later you're gonna have to.
Yeah,
cut somebody or cost them a career or have an influence in that. And don't cross me probably.
If I don't ask this question, I'm going to get an hour's worth of grief. Oh. Mike Zigomanis will join us for Leafs Morning Skate, who is back there someplace. wants to know whether you as a manager slotted hitters in the lineup solely on numbers, or is there a feel involved? Which is that, you know, question. I guess it varies from game to game almost, right? But you must have had. Yeah, I mean, I remember Buck Rogers telling me one time that anytime he wanted to end an argument with a reporter, he'd just say, look, I went with my gut. Because nobody can ever argue against a manager's gut feel when it comes to something.
Right. Well, you know what happened? No, you know, you got your – everybody knows who the best hitters are on your team, right? Those are guys, as long as baseball's been around, they hit at the top of the lineup. You know, the thinking is changed a little bit on – what spot in the lineup, mm-hmm. but your best players hit up top, you know, and you know, so going into a season, you say, okay, we got this guy. Okay. Now the time you might start tinkering is, you know, if something's not clicking, this guy's struggling, that's it. And I mean, I did probably the last couple of years more juggling than I ever wanted or liked, but a lot of that was trying to get something going, you know, but, you know, it's funny. I kind of got the reputation I'm anti-analytics or blah, blah, blah. You know,
no.
Which is, no, you know.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really unfair. You know, there's things I use. But, you know, baseball has been using numbers and stats forever. They just didn't call it analytics and it just wasn't to this extreme.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, you know, played for, God, Davey Johnson. You played for Davey Johnson, and he was – he had binders.
Yeah, he was ahead of the game, you know. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, hell, we hit Batista lead off. I mean, that wouldn't have happened, you know. Mm-hmm. I like the fact, you know, that we hit Donaldson MVP in the two slot. That, you know, I mean, that's not anti-analytics. You know, we did the shifts, all that stuff. So I think it's kind of a fair rap. But I think what's important, I think where analytics has gotten out of hand is you know, you really forget the human element, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In baseball. You know, where it's a team sport, but played as individuals. And if you get carried away with this or that dictating, you know, let's say pitching, for example, I mean, you're not going to ever have any more great performances, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to take away from some of that because, well, it says I should do this or that. You know, you got some pitcher out there. I mean, we see some of that in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Guys are rolling along, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, I get it's late in the game. But some nights, some guys just got it. One thing I've learned in this business, and it's from the baseball gods, man. If you try to get in the way of something good that's happened, you get punished.
That was probably one of your big strengths as a manager, though. You knew when to kind of step back and not gum up the works, right?
Yeah, I think so. You're not right every time.
No,
I mean, nobody ever is. But you know, I don't need a stat sheet to tell me this guy's good out there. I mean, it's what I'm watching. I'm watching performance up, and in that same guy, he may be a star player. I don't need a number to tell me he's bad that night.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, I mean, common sense has kind of been thrown out the window a lot in this game, you know, and I think we can try to be too smart. You know, it's a different sport than a lot of, you know, football's all X's and O's. You know, if you get mm-hmm. a good game plan, or you can adjust on the fly, or you call the right plays, or, you know, you get whatever. That's everything in football. That's another sport I really know. You know, in baseball, doesn't work that way. Like I said earlier, I think your number one job is hold the team together because you're doing it every day. Try to keep them mentally positive in a mm-hmm. good frame of mind, and let the boys go out and perform.
I'm already getting texts and emails from people. Virginia McQuarrie in Halifax said, looking forward to seeing John Gibbons at the Sports Celebrity Dinner this week in Halifax. Don't worry, it's not as cold here as it is out west.
Can I wear jeans and a sport coat to that, you think, out in Halifax? Or would that be insulting?
I don't think so.
No?
No. Jeans and sport coat.
I wore that in
Moose
Jaw.
Jeans and sport coat. Did you wear boots in Moose Jaw, too? Cowboy boots?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. I don't know. I think anybody would have a problem with that.
Okay.
If they do, screw them.
They won't let me in.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Not let you in?
I guess my point
is... In the head table.
My point is, what do you think everybody else will be wearing? You think... I've never been to Halifax. You think they'll...
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be okay.